Hi, friends. I'm Kara Kay, and this is the Asking for a Friend podcast, a show for the woman who has questions about herself, the church, and the world. We are all asking hard questions that affect us as women in the culture that surrounds us, and we are looking for a safe place to ask them. But don't worry, I know you're only asking for a friend. All right, friends, welcome to another episode of Asking for a Friend. I'm sitting down today with Kat Harris, who is the author of the new book, Sexless in the City. So Kat, welcome to the show. I'm so excited to talk to you today about sex and dating and femininity and feminism and just all these tough things that women struggle with.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to get down to the nitty gritty and have some real talk.
That's right.
Let's do it.
All right. So kick us off and tell me a little bit about your story for people that don't know you, maybe that a little of your background and what you're passionate about.
Yeah. So I just wrote the book, like you said, Sexless in the City. I have run an online platform called The Refined Woman for almost 10 years now. It's a place where I really hope to empower and equip women with tools to walk out their life with clarity, freedom, resolve, rooted in their worthiness, and really wholeness. So anything really, what I really work with my clients on is how to identify shaming narratives that are sort of under the surface running their lives, and then flip that narrative to living more freely, wholly, abundantly, all that good stuff. So I do that through my podcast. I have a podcast called The Refined Collective, and my website's The Refined Woman. And really, a lot of that stemmed from me growing up in Southern, very conservative evangelical culture and being given a lot of scripts and a lot of narratives about who I am as a woman, who I am as a human, scripts about what it means to date and sex and sexuality and desire, and really never questioning those belief systems until I moved to New York City about almost upwards of a decade ago now, and really coming to a fork in the road moment in my own story where I had to pause and say, what do I actually believe about God? And what do I believe about sex? And what do I believe about dating, intimacy, my body, and really everything in between? And really it was in giving myself the permission to deconstruct a lot of those narratives that I was given that I was able then to rebuild from a place of freedom. So I could say a lot more, but yeah, that'll get us started.
I think that we grew up very similarly, just in the purity culture and all these things pushed at us, true love waits and all the, you know, all those narratives, but not really figuring out these things for ourselves. That was my story for sure. And it's interesting. I recently did an episode about purity culture, and I read a book about a year ago, and I didn't realize how much shame and just burden that I was still carrying from that, from my teenage years, my early 20s, that I was still battling. I didn't realize until about a year ago, and I've been married 13 years, and went to my husband and said, oh my gosh, I had no idea. I was still struggling with this idea of what sex is and what it looks like and what sexuality for women should be. And so I'd say I'm still in that space of deconstructing some of those things. So I think that this message is important across the board, you know? So if you're listening and you're like, but I'm married, so this doesn't relate to me. No, that is not necessarily true. There's so much of this that all women need to dive into and figure out. There's lots of resources out there about, you know, sex and sexuality and things for women. How are you approaching the topic differently? What is special and unique about the way that you're doing this?
Yeah, well, Gosh, I think for me, when I was going down my path of what do I believe about God? What do I believe about sex? What do I believe about my body? What do I believe about gender roles?
Yeah.
What are the gender roles that were prescribed to me via Christianity and pastors and sermons and even Bible school? And are those true? And I think the question I started asking myself was, what if I'm wrong? Mm-hmm. What if the information I was given, even if given with good intentions, was misinformation? Mm-hmm. And so I think, honestly, what makes my resources different is my story. And I think also the idea that what I'm sharing comes from a woman. There is so much information out there, especially in Christian culture, about dating, about sex, about quote unquote purity, which I even like using that word because it is very triggering. Yes. And most of that information is provided by men. Mm-hmm. And most of that information, on top of that, most of that information is from white men and men who primarily got married in their early 20s. Mm-hmm. And it's not that what they are saying is all wrong or bad. Right. Some of it is incredibly problematic, which we can get into. Mm-hmm. It's just that men who got married in their early 20s have no idea what it's actually like to walk out sexuality in 20s, 30s, 40s in their singleness. They have no idea what online dating is like. And also they have no idea what it's like to be a woman. Right. And so I think I kind of grew tired of hearing men tell me who I was or wasn't. And then on the same thread of that, many of these pastors and men that were teaching these messages of quote unquote purity were not living lives of purity themselves or lives of sexual integrity. And we're living in a time in Western evangelical culture where another male pastor is being exposed to infidelity, pornography, or some sort of quote unquote moral failure almost every other week. And I think for me, I just got to the point where I was like, I'm just really done hearing what they have to say, because in a sense, they've lost some of their credibility. And I wanted to hear from a woman that was actually living this out and seeking a holistic vision for sexuality outside of a set of rules. Because I think outside of all the stuff about a lot of the narrative being controlled or offered by men, the second thing was I felt as though all I had really been given was a set of rules, a set of do's and don'ts. So you can have sex in marriage. If you don't, you're out of the club. You can, your job as a woman is this. So you can do this, you can't do this. And I think really, if I zoom out of that, the vision that was cast was a set of do's and don'ts to earn your seat at the table. Rules that had a heart to produce conformity that were often rooted in shame, as opposed to when I look at the God story, I see relationship, dignity, and acceptance leading the way to transformation. And so what I hope is that my story, my book, my resources are not just giving another script of do's and don'ts, another shame-induced approach to navigating sexuality and desire, but tools to really equip you to walk out your life with freedom, rooted in truth, and relationship that ultimately I think relationship produces transformation, not rules. And I think where we really got it wrong is we wanted to tell people what to do. Yes. as long as he's not touching your butt and you're not having sex and you're not having sleepovers and you're shutting down your sexual desire until your marriage night, then you're all good. And I think married and single, we are living in the fallout of that way not working. We have a generation of people ashamed of their sexual desire, even married and terrified of their sexual desire because they were taught their whole lives it was wrong or bad or gross. And I just think we have to try again because that didn't work and it's not working.
Yeah. Well, it's like we're told, you know, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. And then, oh, you're married. now go do this. And it's one, and make it wonderful when no one has walked you through anything or had any conversations with you. And so I remember walking into marriage, like, I'm clueless. I called one of my best friends who had gotten married a few months before me. It was like, can you explain all this to me? Like, I know I'm like 24 years old, but I have no idea what I'm doing or what I'm supposed to do and how to be a good wife and what is okay and what is not okay, you know? And so walking through those things, even as a young married woman, is like, and still, like I said, 13 years later, still battling some of those things. Like, is this okay? Is this not okay? Because we, our generation was not having the conversations that we needed to be having. Talk to me about, you mentioned like growing into your, you know, walking through your 20s, your 30s, your 40s, and trying to navigate that sexuality and dating and online dating. Let's break that down a little bit. What does that look like for women today? You know, for the woman who's listening, that's like, okay, I'm single and I want to be faithful. I want to have sexual integrity. What does that look like? How can she find that? How can she live in that way?
Yeah. Oh man, that's such a broad question. Yes. Let me try to tackle some of that. So I'll start answering. And if you want to go a certain direction, but I think the first thing is to figure out your why. Why do you believe what you believe about your body, about sex, about desire, about gender roles? Why do you believe what you believe? Where did those beliefs come from? Was it, oh, I believe that sex is for marriage because that's what I was told. Have you ever done your own seeking? Have you read the scriptures for yourself? Have you done your own research? What I really, really, really want is to empower women to do their own work. So what do you believe and why? Where did those beliefs come from? What did you learn from school, from home, from culture, from peers, from church or religious institutions? And then from there, how did those different avenues shape what you believe today? Now, underneath all of those narratives, go to the root of them. What are they rooted in? Are they rooted in fear? Well, that's not God's heart for you. 2 Timothy 1:7 says that God gave you not a spirit of fear, but of power, love, and a sound mind. And John 10:10 says that Jesus came that we would have an abundant life. So any narratives that are rooted in fear, shame, scarcity, lack, condemnation, isolation, none of those things are God's heart for us. And so from there, okay, now that I know what I believe and where those beliefs come from, are they rooted in fear or freedom? Then let's rebuild. I'm sure that some of those are not rooted in wholeness. Right. And also, at least for me, the part in my story where I got was, I realized I actually don't know what the Bible says myself. I actually had no idea if the Bible actually said not to have sex outside of marriage. I just trusted what everyone else had told me and built a theology based off sound bites and rules given to me by other people. So really, when I was then given the chance in dating to really have my beliefs manifest, because, you know, our it's one thing to have an idea of how you want to show up in dating or what your physical boundaries are or aren't, and then you actually date and then it can be different or harder.
Right.
And so I think we all want to go towards the practical. Well, so can I have sex or not outside of marriage? Is sex only for procreation? Is online dating a sin? Can I have sleepovers? And I think that's, we all want those answers,
right?
But we can't really get those answers until we go to the core of what we believe and why. It honestly, my approach is not different from Simon Sinek's approach to building a successful business. He says every business knows what they do. They know what they produce. They know what their services are. Some companies know how to do it. Very few companies know why. And it's the companies that know their why that are able to transcend the test of time. And he says the most influential leaders lead with the why, i.e. Martin Luther King Jr. didn't say, I have a plan. He said, I have a dream. And so how do I navigate my sexuality and desire? First things first is I go back to navigating what is my why. Why am I showing up the way I'm showing up? Why am I believing what I'm believing? Is it rooted in fear or freedom? If it's rooted in fear, how can I then discover what is true about who I am and what my body actually is and what sexuality actually is? And so then we get to the practical. And I think what can be hard about that, even as I explain that, I'm like thinking of the person who just wants the easy answer and might tune me out right now because they're like, well, I want the five steps. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, we live in a culture that we just love instant gratification. Mm-hmm. I want the five steps to double my Instagram overnight. I want the six hacks to get a six pack in 6 weeks. I want to have the formula to regurgitate to my boyfriend what my boundaries are or aren't. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, until we are internally motivated, our belief systems are like a house of cards that will crumble to the ground when a gust of wind comes by. Mm. So for me,
that's so good. Like,
so for me, when it came to dating, I moved to New York City. I dated more in 1 year than I had in a decade. I was online dating. I was casually dating. And I realized on the heels of a breakup, I had no idea why I was not having sex outside of what had externally been told to me. Mm-hmm. So at some level, I felt like a victim to Christianity. Yeah. I felt like a victim to the pressure of what other people wanted me to do and be.
Right.
And again, I, at the end of this journey, I actually ended it more conservative than when I started, which was the big surprise to me. But I had to get to a place where I was coming from an inside out belief. Okay. And I think if we zoom out every other area of our lives, like, I can't want your transformation more than you want it for yourself.
Right.
I can't want someone to know God more than they want to know God themselves. So I think really true transformation happens from the inside out. Mm-hmm.
So for the person that's like, okay, but I just need the answers, mm-hmm. the person that's going to go to Google and Google, can I have sex outside of marriage as a Christian? Or, you know, is this wrong? Is this right? Mm-hmm. How would you, if you were sitting with someone, how would you help start them on that journey? Because I feel like there's so many things out there that's like, well, there's this side of the narrative and then there's this side of the narrative. It's sometimes hard for us to find our place and, yeah. and really discover what scripture says.
Yeah. I think when I approach a question, a topic, a theme or anything, is this right or wrong?
Right.
I think that's the, mm-hmm. I think that's an unhealthy approach.
Yeah.
Because I'm not really wanting to deal with my heart.
Yeah.
Because the reality is, as much as we don't like the gray, mm-hmm. a lot of this stuff is in the gray.
Right.
And I think that can feel very scary as people of faith, especially mm-hmm. growing up in evangelical culture. Yeah. Like, you either believe or you don't. You're a believer yeah. or you're not. It's yeah. right or it's wrong. It's good or it's evil. Yet we see over and over and over again in the scriptures, Jesus honoring the person who asks questions. Mm-hmm. We see Peter getting it really right and getting it really wrong. A very big doubter, a very big yeah. question asker. We see the father asking Jesus to heal his demon-possessed son, and to Jesus, the man says, I believe you, but help my unbelief. Like, right. I believe you kind of, but I don't really know what I believe. Mm-hmm. And so I think what is so beautiful about Jesus, is, first of all, Jesus didn't resent or condemn that person, that man. Mm-hmm. He honored where he was at in the journey. So I think the first step outside of, well, can I have sex or not? Mm-hmm. Like, that's not the right approach. God always right. cares about our heart. So I think the first thing to do is acknowledge, what is the actual desire of my heart? Mm. Well, actually, I really want to have sex. Mm-hmm. And perhaps I also really love God. And I want to make a decision. I am in alignment with my values, with the invitation of Jesus. And so from that place, then how do I want to move forward? So instead of, well, I can't do this because it's wrong. Again, right. That's me being attached to external pressure, external obligation. Until we come from a place of internal motivation, then we're just doing a tit for tat. We're doing rules. Right. We're being the Pharisee, mm-hmm. where we might be doing the right action, but our hearts are far from God. And so in that, it's like, so how do I approach online dating? Is online dating a sin? Well, gosh, I don't think that's the most healthy approach there. Mm-hmm. God, how do you want me to interact with technology? Wow. Yeah. For me, I'm so grateful for technological advances that right. allow me to connect with people that I could be interested in dating. Mm-hmm. When it comes to, I think once you know your why, whether it's, oh gosh. So for me, after all of this, I realized, you know what? I do want to wait until marriage to have sex. Mm-hmm. And I also know that my body is good because God doesn't create bad things. Right. I also know that God created pleasure and pleasure is good. I know that God created sexual desire. So my sexual desire isn't bad or gross or dirty. I know that God didn't create me compartmentalized, mm-hmm. meaning in Genesis 1, when God created humans, God said humans are made in God's image and are very good. Mm-hmm. So God didn't say your spirit is good, but your body is bad. That's actually right. Gnosticism. God yeah. also didn't say your spirit is good, your body is good, but your sexual desire is only good in marriage. No, mm-hmm. God just said we are humans made in the image of God and we are very good. So right. that means that my sexuality isn't who I am, but it's a part of who I am, regardless of my relationship status. So I think that's a really good news as a single person that I do not have to shut down part of who I am
right.
until one day that may or may not happen. But I can say, I love Jesus and I'm connected to my sexual desire. Mm-hmm. And I also can choose to wait until marriage to have sex or not.
Yeah. That's so encouraging. As someone that's raising, I have 4 kids, 3 that are girls, and it feels like this huge pressure to, how do I change the narrative for the next generation? Mm. How do I help them walk into this and ask those questions and find their why without the shame and without, you know, because we want our kids to be safe. We want, you know, we don't want them to make mistakes. We don't want them to get hurt. But at the same time, they are just like us. They're good, made in the image of God. And so we want them to discover that on their own. And so it can be really challenging, but it's so encouraging to see this narrative shift from when we were kids and we were hearing those things that were damaging and have yeah. such long-term effect on us. Before we wrap up, I wanted to spend more time talking about this, and I could probably do a whole episode on this, but I want to hear what you have to say. I talk sometimes about feminism, and I get pushback on that, like, oh, you can't be a feminist and be a Christian. But I don't think that that's true. I want to hear what you have to say about that.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I mean, I used to think that as well. I used to think feminism was a 4-letter word.
Right.
And then I started reading the Bible.
Yep.
And it's so interesting to me that we have this narrative in Christian culture of this quiet, mousy, submissive archetype of a woman, when that's not farther than the God story. We see actually one of the most countercultural, scandalous, provocative things about God of the Old Testament and Jesus of the New Testament was how for women and for strong women God, Jesus was and is. Mm-hmm. We see in the Old Testament, Queen Esther using her voice and her influence to put an end to a potential genocide. We yeah. see Proverbs 31, that's typically used to be this archetype of this quiet, submissive woman. Mm-hmm. However, when we go to the text, we see a very progressive woman who is a business owner who has multiple business ventures and is business savvy, who uses her voice mm-hmm. in the home and publicly for influence and for good. And that Proverbs 31 is progressive today in religious circles, mm-hmm. but think about it thousands of years ago,
right.
in a time where women were viewed as property, from going under the authority of their father to the authority of a husband, mm-hmm. often in a very, in a loveless marriage that mm-hmm. was a contract, a business deal. This woman, women mainly could not read. They were mainly illiterate, mm-hmm. Because they had no voice in culture, no say. And in fact, the only thing that was their role in society was to produce children, and at that, a male heir. If they didn't do that, they could be cast out, they could be stoned to death, they could be turned into a hired servant or a slave, they could be kicked out and destitute.
Yeah.
Yet, even in the Old Testament, we see women of influence who are using their voices, mm-hmm. who are literate, who are a voice in their culture and community and running their own businesses. Mm-hmm. Like, this would have been shocking. It would have been shocking in Hebrew culture. And then we see the New Testament story of Jesus and Jesus's ministry being funded by business savvy entrepreneurial women like Lydia, who yeah. owned a clothing company. We have Phoebe, who was a deacon in the church. We have Junia. We have all these women who were not just serving in the background, mm-hmm. but were disciples and using their voices for the kingdom of God. We see Jesus revealing himself first in the resurrection to a woman alone in a garden. I mean, that would have been inappropriate at best, mm-hmm. scandalous and provocative. I mean, the idea that Jesus was meeting alone with women and Samaritan women at that, mm-hmm. who were viewed as dirty and outcast. He was letting sinners and prostitutes anoint him with oil. Jesus was leading the charge in culture, in first century culture, saying you might view women as second class citizens or women that only belong to the submission of their husbands, mm-hmm. but I'm saying that women are equal. I am saying that women are created with the same God image as men. And then we see verses like Ephesians 5 that historically have been used to feed a narrative that say, women, be quiet, submit to your mm-hmm. husband. However, the provocative part of that text, if we read it in first century context, wouldn't have been wives, submit to your husband. It would have been the few verses before that mm-hmm. that said, submit to each other out of reverence for Jesus. So respect each other. And then Paul took it even further. The emphasis wasn't on the wife's submission, but on the husband loving the wife. Mm-hmm. So being faithful, not cheating on, treating his wife as an equal, putting his wife's needs above hers. And so when I look at the God story and I line that up with what is feminism, feminism by definition is the belief in the social, political, economical equality of the sexes.
Right.
And I 100% believe that God is for women and that Jesus was very much feminist.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, that's an answer right there. You nailed it. I love it. All right. This has been incredible. Like, I just realized how quickly our time flew by. Will you tell everyone where they can find you, where they can get your book and learn more about all the awesome work you're doing?
Yeah, for sure. So my book is sexlessinthecitybook.com, and you can get it there or at Amazon, Kindle, Audible, Barnes & Noble, really wherever books are sold. And my social media and website is The Refined Woman, and my weekly podcast is The Refined Collective.
Awesome. Well, I'll put links to all that in the show notes today. Kat, thank you so much for taking the time to encourage us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm Kara K. James, and you've just listened to the Asking for a Friend podcast. I hope you are inspired and encouraged by these conversations to step out of the status quo and engage in conversations that matter. You can find the show notes for this episode and subscribe at karakjames.com/podcast. I also love connecting with you on Instagram and Facebook. I am at karak.james. You can also subscribe to my newsletter at karakjames.com/newsletter. This podcast is meant to provide you with a safe space to work through the questions you have about yourself, the church, and the world around you. Please never hesitate to reach out to me if you need a safe place to land. Thanks for listening, and keep asking questions for a friend.